honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an eye-opening conversation with 99-year-old George Coburn of Oceanside, California, one of the last remaining survivors from the battleship USS Oklahoma at Pearl Harbor. We've heard how he was in the plotting room down below when the alarm sounded. He felt the impact of the first of at least 9 torpedoes that struck the ship that Sunday morning, and soon he was trapped in a dark, oily, chaotic mess. We've heard him explain how he eventually was able to climb up, ultimately to find a porthole and get out onto what was really the side of the ship, now capsized in a once tranquil harbor turned into a horrific scene. And what was that scene from your vantage point, George? What did you see when you finally got out of that porthole?
I saw a lot of smoke and fire, and I saw airplanes buzzing around, and I heard the zing of ricocheting bullets, and because they kept making passes down the battleship row and strafing. I slid down the side of the bottom of the ship, actually, and into the water and kicked off my shoes in order to swim better. And the ship was tied up to the Maryland, and as it turned over, the space between the two ships widened and was maybe 60, 75 feet wide by the time I got in the water. And the ropes that had tied two ships together parted as Oklahoma rolled over, and some of them were still hanging into the water, and each of those had a dozen men trying to climb up, and nobody could make any progress because it just too many, and they were like a bunch of bananas. Me and other fellows yelled at people who looked over the side of the Maryland and throw down some more ropes so we can come aboard. And eventually somebody did, and I got aboard the Maryland and was put to work immediately handling ammunition to a 3-inch 50 anti-aircraft gun, which I might say was one of the most useless weapons the Navy had. The probability of hitting an airplane with that gun was somewhat below zero.
It's like trying to hit a butterfly with a bazooka or something?
Yeah.
Well, and you mentioned because your ship has rolled over so far, you're actually sliding down the bottom of the ship into the water. And was that water on fire? Was it oily? What were you dealing with there?
Well, it was foul because we didn't have a tank aboard ship to store sewage until we were far at sea. It went right into the bay. So Pearl Harbor was probably some of the most polluted water in the world.
And are there still bullets flying while you're in the water trying to get a rope?
Well, the Arizona blew up while I was in the water. That was a magnificent explosion. The ball of fire rolled up and didn't dissipate right away. It just kept rising. And Arizona released a lot of fuel oil, and it was on the surface of the water, and the wind was blowing it toward us. It was on fire. That didn't worry me because I was a good swimmer, and I figured I can swim faster than that's coming. But anyway, I did get go aboard to Maryland, and was kind of disheartening, you know. Had just lost my home and probably some good friends, all of my personal belongings. The only thing I had was what I happened to have in my pocket when I left the ship. That happened to be a little screwdriver about 3 inches long. So, wasn't much utility in that.
you know, here you've been through all this, but you get aboard the Maryland and there's still a battle going on. So they throw you right into work passing the ammunition.
The Maryland got hit by a bomb while I was aboard. I understand the damage wasn't really bad, but it wouldn't take long. But they moved all of us from the Oklahoma over onto Ford Island and mustered us and began trying to find out who made it out and who didn't. And from there, they moved us on over to Westlock, which was an ammunition depot, and we went to work replenishing ammunition to make up for what had been expended during the raid. One of the ships that came in, it was a destroyer that had been on offshore patrol and had sunk a midget submarine. They came in for depth charges, and a bunch of angry sailors, because what I heard from them was that the ship had sent in to headquarters in Pearl Harbor that they had sunk a submarine in a restricted area. I call it restricted area because they had this area outside out in the open ocean where a submarine was not allowed to proceed submerged unless they had a surface escort. So the destroyer, I think the name was Ward, the thing that they were incensed about was they sent the word in and they got a return message that said, verify the report they sent back to Pearl Harbor. Verify hell, we're sinking another one right now. So exactly how that exchange went, I don't know, but that's what I got from the crew.
And the implication is that people, well, ships like yours could have been on alert as opposed to caught off guard if that had been communicated correctly?
I don't know that it would have done a whole lot of good. Getting a ship underway and clearing the harbor, I don't think we had time to do it.
So there were 429 who died aboard the Oklahoma that day. Did it set in immediately for you that certain guys were lost, or was there an uncertainty for a while you're trying to figure out which ones of your friends made it and who didn't?
It took me a long time to figure that out because information, well, there was a lot of information running around and being repeated here, there, and everywhere, but you never knew whether it was bogus or whether it was real. And so as a result, nobody felt well informed.
Well, and I don't want to leave anything out from 77, almost 78 years ago now, but with all this time and finally seeing the list and finding out over time who didn't make it, are there some people that you knew well that you still reflect on every once in a while that were killed that day?
Yes. Yeah. There was later during the war, we had a beer bust once in a while on one of the South Pacific islands. We didn't have any of those grass-skirted girls, but anyway, I met a fellow who told me about one of the fire patrolmen that he saw before he got out of the ship. And I won't mention the guy's name because he might have family still wondering. But anyway, he saw this fellow, a red-headed kid. He was down at the low side of the ship and wallowing around in a flooded area and apparently confused to the degree where he couldn't make any real progress. And I always wondered what happened to that guy. He wasn't a close friend. I didn't know him well, but he was in my division and an acquaintance. But then I looked in the book Battleship Oklahoma, and there's a list of the entire crew and who survived and who didn't, and after this kid's name was missing in action. He didn't make it.
Well, and there are quite a few whose remains were never identified, and just in the last couple of years, they've started to identify more of those and return them home.
Using DNA to identify them. They get family samples and are able to pretty well lock in the identity that way.
Well, and another thing that was fairly unique about the Oklahoma is because it capsized, there were still some pockets of air, and there were guys trapped inside for a day and a half. Were you guys aware at the time? Did you hear about the crews that were working to try to rescue them?
Yes. Yeah, we heard about them. In fact, I saw some of the activity. It had already started while I was still aboard the Maryland, and they really got on it promptly. And, of course, they were able to save, what, 30-some-odd men, and too bad they couldn't get more. But
well, and that's what I was curious about, because here, this is your ship, and this has been such a devastating situation. I mean, it devastated the whole country. But to have that rescue a day and a half later, was that a shot in the arm?
Somewhat, yeah. Although by then I was over in Westlock handling ammunition. I had no real firsthand news. You know, there were all kinds of stories running around. I mean, we were going to be invaded, and a lot of, well, let's say sailors have a good imagination. They didn't have a story, they made one up.
Was there a moment for you where the magnitude of the whole situation sank in, where you could fathom how much had been destroyed and how devastating it was?
There actually was a moment like that. But it wasn't in proximity to the actual happening. It was decades later. In fact, it was fairly recent. I've thought about that morning many times. But this one time, it seemed real again. And I thought, dang, there's something missing here. And later I wrote that the thing that was missing might be the emotional devastation that we suffered. I wrote, we lost our home, probably some good friends. All of our personal belongings and our magnificent fleet was rapidly being turned into junk. I really felt the impact of that morning more strongly at that time than I did while I was experiencing it.
Well, and you know, I threw out that number, 429, and the only ship that lost more that morning was the Arizona, of course. But what about your family back here in San Diego? I'm sure they're hearing it on the radio that Pearl Harbor has been attacked. They know that's where you are. What did they experience?
You know, the Salvation Army, some ladies came by when I was at Westlock, and they gave us postcards and already stamped and pencils. And so I wrote on the postcard and put it in the mail. And I was lucky enough to get home in January, and I walked in the door, and they thought I was a ghost. The postcard hadn't arrived, and it didn't arrive for several more weeks.
So your mother had presumed, because of the news reports, that you had died.
That's what they thought, yeah. They thought that I'd gone down with the ship like so many others did.
But then you walked in the door.
Yeah.
So what was the look on your mother's face?
Astonishment, and probably mixed with relief and et cetera. But I don't know. Primarily it was astonishment.
And you naturally had assumed that they'd received the postcard, right?
Yes, I had assumed that. And otherwise I might have tried to make some kind of pre-entry contact. But I just walked in the door like I'd been across the street talking to Charlie.
That must have caught you off guard to see your mother's reaction.
Well, yes, it did. It would surprise me. By that time, I'd had enough recent surprises, though, that didn't have any problem with it.
A much better surprise than what he experienced on December 7th. George Coburn, 99 years old, of Oceanside, California, survivor of the USS Oklahoma at Pearl Harbor. And he would go on to serve for the duration of the war aboard the heavy cruiser USS Louisville, But by now, you've probably figured out that we're about out of time on this episode, so we'll wait till next time to explore what he did on the Louisville, a ship that earned 13 battle stars in the Pacific. So we'll look forward to those adventures with Mr. Coburn. And don't forget to visit hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for photos and a short video relating to Mr. Coburn and his remarkable story. Thanks so much for spending this hour with us. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.